Thanks, Tara, for the introduction, and also to the conference conveners for the opportunity to speak here today. Just as a way of introduction, a lot of what I'm going to be talking about is actually just simply my perspective and my own reflections as a program manager rather than Queensland Health views. Before I begin, I'd also like to acknowledge my fellow coordinators. There's three of us across Queensland, as well as the staff from Communicable Diseases Branch and Queensland Health, and of course to the many service providers and managing staff, the vaccination clinics in Queensland. For those of you who aren't all that familiar with Australia, it has about the same landmass as the US, with a population of about 22 million people. Queensland is here on the east coast and is located at a similar latitude to Central America in the Caribbean, so it's largely tropical and subtropical. And Brisbane is the state capital and located in the southeast and the most populous area of the state. The Immunise Australia program is part of the major infrastructure of immunisation in Australia, and it's a joint federal and state program with the aim of funding vaccination service delivery infrastructure. And the basic breakdown of responsibilities between the states and the federal government is that the federal government funds pretty well all of the vaccines that are recommended on the National Immunisation Program, or our equivalent of the ACIP, and the states coordinate public sector service delivery as well as vaccine distribution. Queensland is a relative newcomer to school-based vaccination program, having only introduced our program in 2007, whereas some of our other states have got quite long-standing programs. And put simply, those other states were able to achieve much higher rates than we were able to achieve in Queensland. And whereas our program previously focused on promoting vaccination through the family GP or family physician, as you'd call them in the US. As you can see, we're quite a large state. We're also a very diverse state. And those two factors are probably the two main factors on why it took us so long compared to our counterparts to be able to develop a school program. Queensland has most of its population, about 2.5 million people, in the southeast corner, and then several regional centres of between 30 and 150,000 people. So outside from that southeast corner, we're not heavily populated. There are about 100 different service providers who are contracted to deliver the program, and they're drawn from, for the most part, from local governments or counties, and with some of the local health facilities run by Queensland Health delivering programs as well as some GPs and community nursing services. The following few slides will outline some of the results we've achieved with the program. Hepatitis B vaccination is one of our longer standing adolescent vaccinations, and it's been funded since 2001. So it's a really good example for us of the difference that delivering vaccinations through a school can make. Basically, we've been able to achieve a 50% increase in course completion since 2007. And you'll note that the 2009 results for this vaccine, as well as a couple of the other vaccines that are following, are actually quite low. And that's largely due to data entry and data cleaning delays. However, we are expecting those results to reflect the last couple of years as well. Once again, we have a different term for it other than Tdap, but the diphtheria tetanus pertussis booster has also increased over 50% since the introduction of the school program. And while varicella has demonstrated a remarkable increase, that has been from quite a low baseline level. We do expect that to creep up over the coming years as we hopefully will see less circulating chickenpox in the community. Australia introduced its HPV program in 2007 with a young women's catch-up program, and this coincided with the start of our school program. as a result, the graph here actually shows different age groups, so it's a bit hard to compare across years in the way it has been with the other slides. However, probably the main take-home message is that in just 2 years, we've been able to achieve a course completion rate of more than 60% across the for this vaccine, which, when we compare it to Hep B in 2003, we, without the school program, were able to achieve a completion rate of about 45%, and that was with a two-dose schedule rather than a three-dose. And obviously, the big difference appears to be the school-based infrastructure. Obviously, none of this. Obviously, this all comes at a cost. We provide funding to service providers based on at the level of paying them $10 per vaccine offered on a particular visit, plus $5 if a second vaccine is also offered on that same visit. And we base that around a formula which presumes three visits to each school, and really, in most cases, two vaccines given at the same visit. We also assume that 90% of students will be vaccinated, which is a fairly unachievable aim in most areas, but it does give us two advantages. One is it keeps the funding formula simple, but also it ensures that service providers are relieved of any risks arising from poor responses to the program, most of which are outside of the provider's ability to influence. A number of benefits of the program that we've identified is, from a public health program perspective, it's been quite effective at targeting services to a specific population. We've also been able to achieve higher rates more quickly than it would have otherwise been the case in the absence of a school program, and HPV is probably the best example of that. And also importantly, it's helped us to increase our vaccination workforce capability, and I'll talk about that a little later. And for local government, for service providers, and in particular local governments, we've always encouraged them to provide infant vaccination services and early childhood vaccination services. But unfortunately, we've never been able to follow through with high levels of funding for that. And so the addition of a fully funded school program has provided an extra funding stream for these programs, which has been important because for local governments, immunisation isn't core business and has historically run at a loss, which means every budget cycle, the senior management of the local governments is sort of raising questions about whether those sorts of programs should continue or not. And for parents and students, of course, the program provides good access to services at no cost. Some of the lessons that we've learnt over the last couple of years is by moving into a purchaser of services when the Queensland Health Immunisation Program area is normally simply a coordinator, it has increased our accountability for clinical safety, and that's particularly so where providers are not all that organisationally experienced in contemporary patient safety and clinical incident management practices, which has also had the benefit, I must say, by being a funder, of giving us some leverage over those same organisations to be able to influence their behaviour and alter practices. Data collection with a program of this size is always a challenge. Providers contractually need to demonstrate that the service has been delivered through the provision of certain data, and also service providers are obligated to report all vaccination episodes for inclusion onto VIVAS, which is Queensland Health's vaccination register. Integrating these two demands has been tricky, and also quite complex, and we're still working on trying to simplify the process for our service providers. Queensland, and in fact the rest of Australia, does not have a statutory age for giving consent for a medical procedure. Instead, there is a legal principle which means that an individual can give consent provided they show a mature understanding of the risks and benefits of that procedure. And of course, this meant, particularly in the first couple of years of the HPV program in particular, we had a number of girls seeking vaccination for HPV against their parents' wishes, and dealing with that did require some work. Some of the challenges. Look, schools are a great place to find adolescents en masse, but they're not always an ideal location to provide a clinical service. And so we've spent a lot of time with our service providers and working with our schools and developing resources to enable the program to be delivered as safely as possible in that environment. Now, vaccine safety is always a concern to parents, and this has especially been so for HPV, given the disproportionate attention that some adverse event reports have received, and also how recently the vaccine came on the market. Some of our schools oppose vaccination on philosophical grounds. Others, however, just simply see that they have no play, that they, as a school, they should have no role in providing health services. Having said that, though, most of our schools are quite supportive of the program, and so working with schools and engaging with schools is a really critical part of the program for both our providers and myself as the coordinator. And our experience has been that where we have the greatest support and the best relationships with our schools is also the areas where we see the highest vaccination rates, simply because the schools are the ones that are in control of how well the program is communicated home. They're the ones in control of making sure that forms come back and the like. And for our local governments, many of whom have delivered infant vaccinations for many years, it's not a core function, as I said earlier. And in fact, none of them really had any experience in large-scale health service delivery and often need high levels of support, which has been another challenge. This is an example of some recent media. When we asked one of our local governments to help us deliver a swine flu vaccination program, we did find ourselves in the paper. Unfortunately, the councillor or the local elected member was completely unaware that his council was involved in both delivering the school program and ran infant vaccination clinics, and basically asked the question, why would we get involved in immunisation? So it really underpins the need to be able to engage within your partner organisations, as well as particularly where they're not a traditional healthcare provider. Our extra workforce capability has been really important to us over the last 12 months or so. In particular, we had a measles outbreak which saw 12 cases of measles in one school in a community with high rates of opposition to vaccination and subsequent low vaccination coverage. Our response was at that time to shut down the school, screen all the students attending the school for a history of MMR vaccination, and offer vaccination and or exclude the students from school depending on how many doses of MMR they'd had. And really the school program infrastructure was key to being able to respond to that request in a very timely manner. Essentially, the decision was made at about 4:30 on Friday afternoon, and we had to be in there at 8 o'clock Monday morning, so it was quite a quick response. More recently, Queensland Health has undertaken a community-based H1N1 vaccination program, which is still underway as we speak. And a little bit different to the US, we went through the whole flu season last year without the vaccine, only having the vaccine become available when really no one wanted it because the season was over, and it's only been the last little while that people have started to come on the radar for many people. So over the last 5 weeks or so, we've held clinics in all 275 state high schools on a weekend and vaccinated about 109,000 people over the whole state. And really, this program could not have been achieved without the assistance of our school-based providers, many of whom were working 7 days a week to be able to deliver this plus their regular commitments to the school program. So in summary, the school-based vaccination programs can be an effective service delivery model for vaccinating adolescents. It's provided us with the additional benefit of increasing our workforce capability to respond to emergent issues. Any sort of data collection from a program of this size will give you headaches. And if you are not ordinarily a purchaser of services and are a coordinator, the consequences of funding that service delivery need to be considered in the rollout of your program. And most importantly, having good relationships with your service providers, schools, parents and students are critical to your success. Contact details will be on the slides online for anyone who wants to get in touch with me. And thank you.